Cloudcast Media.
Welcome to Your Next Mission Podcast with the 12th Sergeant Major of the Army and co-founder of the American Freedom Foundation, Jack L. Tilley. Proudly presented by Cavalry Agency, Navy Federal Credit Union, Purdue University Global, and Veterans United Home Loans.
Good day out there, veterans and families, and welcome to Season 2 of Your Next Mission, a program initiative of the American Freedom Foundation. I'm Jack L. Tilley, 12th Sergeant Major of the Army, and your host. I always love saying that. And we have a great show for you today. Really, we have a wonderful show for you today. But before we get started, if you're watching this on YouTube, please like us and click on the subscribe button below. We're going to focus on leadership of helping our young people. And now, before we get started, I want to thank our presenting sponsors, Cavalry Agency, Navy Federal Credit Union, Purdue University Global, and Veterans United Home Loans for making Your Next Mission happen. They love our veterans and families, and we love them too. As I mentioned, today's theme is about leadership and helping today's young people. And I'm so excited to introduce Mr. Ed Heiner, Navy SEAL, Lieutenant Commander, retired, author, keynote speaker, and owner of the Heiner Group. Welcome, sir. Glad to have you on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Before we get started, I know the audience is really excited about hearing all the things that you're doing, but can you tell the audience a little bit about yourself?
Well, let's see. I spent 20 years in the SEAL teams, as you said. Mm-hmm. I'm retired. Mustang, by the way. I want to say to everybody out there, I'm a Mustang. Means I was prior enlisted, so, you know. I was a baseball player before I joined, and that didn't work out for me. I luckily found a SEAL. He told me what he did. Boom, overnight, that's what I wanted to do.
Tell us a little about the SEAL. You said you was moving some furniture or doing something like that before we got on there.
I was in Virginia Beach. Me and a friend of mine, one of my teammates and roommates, were down there with his father on the ground. It was Saturday morning. We were, you know, been out all night. And
drink? No, never mind.
No, anything to drink. But his dad ran the storage unit, and he was retired and had a little house on the storage unit. And we were on the floor sleeping, and he wakes us up. His dad had a huge heart, and said, there was a lady that had three little kids. Her husband's on some ship in somewhere. I forget what she said. And she had been evicted, and she needed to get out. So my friend Tom and I got boxes, went to her house, got a truck, went to her house, started packing up her house. First moved back to the storage unit. The guy that was there was right beside me. Was a big kind of buffed up guy, and I started talking to him. He's like, I'm in the Navy, and I'm on leave, so I'll help you guys out. He ended up being a SEAL. So after we moved this lady's furniture for about 24 hours, I ended up hitchhiking back to Richmond. That's how I got around back then.
Yeah.
Hitchhiked back to Richmond and went to recruiter's office.
You know, it's funny how things like that happen. You know, I have a little different story, but, life sort of pushes you in different directions. You know, the Heiner Group focuses a lot of different things, but the things that you stood out and for me, the work you're doing with the young youth, can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, a partner of mine, Charles Parisi, and I, who met about 5 years ago, we started an organization also called a program called SEALpreneurship.
Yeah.
SEAL with entrepreneur, it's more of intrapreneur, how to own thyself, right? And we call it the PhD in me. And we started working with foster youth, juveniles, hard hit parts of our community, kids of color, and we start teaching them mindset. And from the very ground up, we start with 23 evolutions. And in the Navy, in the SEAL teams, I don't know about the Army, but everything we do, shoot, dive, whatever it is, it's called an evolution.
Yeah.
Because you're always evolving. It's kind of that growth thought mindset. Mm-hmm. So we have 23 evolutions. We start off with accountability and kind of move forward into character. And we end up, and all the students actually write their own ethos. It's pretty cool that they kind of, they start, this light goes off in their head, and they start to transition and go, like, yeah, you can own your own life. No one owns it for you. No one with some certificate on a wall or a white coat owns anything but you own it.
Yeah. You know, a lot of people talk about helping youth. Why'd you get into helping youth? I got to ask that question. I know why, because you told me already, but maybe you want to tell the audience why you started that.
Well, it's building my resume for it. What I'm doing.
I do a good job.
God knows I need it. But no, it is kind of that building my resume for heaven thing. I promised myself, and I think everybody promised himself something in combat.
Yeah.
But to me, you know, all the stuff I'd done in Iraq, Afghanistan, all over, yeah, you know, I could live with that. But a lot of the stuff you saw kids suffer. And little kids, their families broken apart, just trauma. And I said, you know, when I get out of here, that's one of the things I'm going to do with my life. Mm-hmm. And helping veterans with the other. And I made a promise. And instead of waiting until I got filthy rich, or, you know, a lot of people wait until it's too late.
You're filthy rich now.
Yeah, I'm just filthy rich, you know. but I just said, you know, I just met with my partner, Charles, and we just said, he was doing that kind of work at the time. I'm all in. So, yeah.
Yeah, you know, the key to success is helping young kids and developing kids for the future.
It is.
And that's what we need to do. You know, for me, understanding leadership was the key to success, especially being as a sergeant major of the Army. And you seem to have some of that same kind of sense. Can you talk about the first Fast and Fearless, I think the name of the book is. Can you tell the audience about that?
Yeah. Well, you know, the title I didn't name. The publisher named it. It was going to be From the Battlefield to the Boardroom.
Oh, is that right?
They did a lot of surveys, and instead this title, The First Fast and Fearless, came out. But really, it came off of what I would call, you know it as well, off the fight triangle, surprise, speed, and violence of action.
Yeah.
First, Fast, Fearless. Kind of the same concept.
Yeah.
And what I wanted to do with that book, and it did do very well, actually, bestseller, is really just kind of bring those principles out.
I was going to say a lot of leadership principles in the book.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's all about leadership, and it talks about just basically three things, the brand, the brotherhood, and then the battle rhythm. Like mm-hmm. how to build your own brand. That's through ethos, character building. And, you know, I think people intuitively sort of know that character is valuable, you know, how you act and how you do in the world. But leadership, it's even more critical. You know as well as I do. You turn that stress dial up and people are counting on you for their life. They want to know who you are and that you have, and I call it the mom model in you. You mission first, others second, me last. Mission mm-hmm. others me. So mm-hmm. that's what our leadership starts with. And then, you know, the brotherhood, which we could call sisterhood. There's no name for that except for family. And how to build that teamwork. And then at the end, how to set the right conditions so the people around you can thrive. You know, and you realize, most leaders realize, especially the higher they go, right? Mm-hmm. The less you actually know about what's going on, and the more you will. And it's, you know, because things happen, and you have to give them the right tools and the right intent, leader's intent, or commander's mm-hmm. intent in the military, mm-hmm. we call it, but I call it leader's intent. Let them understand what success looks like down the road. This is, when you do it well, this is where you're going to end. So, and let them get after it and do it. So.
You know, one of the biggest things, though, is for your unit trusting you.
Trust.
And figuring out how to get all that trust and accomplishing the mission and all of that. Really leading by example. Is those good things for you? Are those things you really focus on?
Yeah, I was going to say, we have an expression, we didn't coin it, but you can only lead as fast as you can trust. And that means people trusting you. You're trusting down, of course, but obviously people trusting you as a leader. And that if you can't have trust, especially in my old profession, you know, with the spec ops world, where they put a lot of trust in young people and individuals. So if we can't trust you, we can't use you. And I think every company, organization about leadership is the same. Yeah. Same principles, just a different environment.
Yeah. If when you talk about leadership and development and stuff, then what's the one thing that you think really is a priority in leadership? I guess it's probably in your book too. I'm sure
it is.
Yeah.
But
it's probably not one thing anyway.
It's character, I think. You have to base it on a solid foundation of your character, and you actually have to define that with yourself. We did as a SEAL team. We actually came up with our own ethos. This is what it means to be a SEAL, and we didn't all agree. You know, and it was a lot of fighting going on. But it's to define who you are as a person, stick to those principles, and show the world those principles.
Yeah.
And it has to start there.
Yeah.
You know, and self-serving and all those things we see in the world, it just doesn't have a place in the military. It doesn't have a place in any organization really wants to be the best.
Yeah. Being a lieutenant commander, you had a senior chief. You talked about it a few minutes ago, right?
Oh, yeah.
How important is that relationship between the... I know that's important. But it is. I know you're going to... I think I know what you're going to say, but how important is that relationship? I know in the Army, commanders and senior NCOs, I mean, you would never be able to accomplish a mission without... Is that important to you?
It's like a marriage, I would say, in a strange way, because... The senior chief, as you know this, the senior enlisted can do things and does things that, as an officer, you can't.
Absolutely.
And that marriage of them, of the two is critical. I know there are many times that weird things happened.
Yeah.
And we would get called into the commanding officer's office. I would. I'm like, one second. I'd go get my senior chief. Like, hey, senior, come on in here. Because he can say, express himself in different ways. But that it's that sounding board. You know, we'd be in meetings where I thought everything was going great, you know, in Iraq or wherever we're at. And after the meeting, because mostly the senior chief would just listen and watch the room, he'd go, no, they ain't buying it. Like, oh, like, oh, he goes, no, no, they're not getting it. I'm like, really?
Yeah.
So I wasn't, so my intent wasn't clear to them, yeah, or somehow I didn't engage them enough to, so I'm like, okay, let me redo that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so it's important. It's hard to explain to people how important it is.
Well, it's
critical.
Yeah, it is critical. It's really hard to explain to people that haven't served in the military. It, you know, I had, at every level that I worked at, I used to tell a commander, says, I'm going to be your honest broker.
Yep.
And I'm going to tell you exactly the truth. And you may not like the truth, but I'm obligated to give you that information. I guess it's the same way with you.
100%. Yeah. Any officer that goes anywhere, really, we would say in the SEAL team, without his senior enlisted, is a, you know, doomed to fail, right?
Yeah.
You know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And it's important that you get... You and your senior enlisted really understand each other very well.
Yeah. Did you ever again, this wasn't something I was going to ask you, but you made me think about this now. Did you ever have one you just didn't get along with or anything?
No. Like
it mm-hmm. was always because they're all really professional non-commissioned yep. officers that do just a tremendous job. You know, 86% of the force is enlisted. A lot of people just yep. don't know that. So that's unbelievable.
What do you think? Most people think of officers when they think of the military, which is not. The military, the backbone, the spine, the frame of everything in the military is senior enlisted.
Really. Yeah, yeah. Was you was never enlisted, was you?
Yes, I was.
Well, you was?
5 years, Mustang.
Oh, is that right? Okay.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So
make sure I drop that every time I go on the run.
Okay. So what made you go to the other side? Yeah,
right. That's a good
Money.
Question. That's a good question.
Yeah.
No, you know, I'd set a goal when I was coming out of college.
Yeah.
You know, and I'd set that goal in my mind. This is what I want to do. This is where I'm going to go. And If I look back honestly, if I would have known 9/11 was going to happen,
yeah,
I probably would have stayed enlisted, to be honest with you. I think I'd have been more effective with longevity as a senior enlisted.
Yeah. You know, a long time ago, I was I think it was a sergeant first class, and I wanted to go warrant. And the only reason I wanted to go warrant was for one reason, that was money.
Yeah.
Because the money on the list, it's a lot better now, that's for doggone sure, but it was... It was really a big problem then, but it's, you know, it's working now. But you're really right. I remember when I used to testify in front of Congress, they'd really
just throw that out there.
Well, they just throw that out. Yeah, just you know, hey,
you know, I was just hanging with the president.
I met like four presidents.
I know.
But when I used to testify in front of Congress, I used to watch the chief. I had Jeff Shinseki was the chief then, and they would sort of rake them through the coals. When you had the enlisted guy got there, they wouldn't say much to him. It's nice because they didn't. They knew that we knew more about what they was talking about than they did.
They did, right. It's a different level of respect. Most people don't understand that.
Yeah.
Even with us and the SEAL teams, you know, everybody thinks officer world. But, you know, we see ourselves as stewards, as servants, really, in some sense. You know, like beginning training all the way to the end, you eat in the back of the line.
Yeah.
And if the food runs out, you don't eat.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't complain. You just shut up and, you know, take it. So it's kind of that concept of... But people on the outside don't know that. You know?
No.
They think, well, here's the officer. He gets this privilege. And, you know, it's not like that at all.
You know, you said servant a minute ago. You know what the word sergeant means in servant? I mean, you know, servant leadership. It means to serve the people above you and below you. And that's why it's hard sometimes to be a good non-commissioned officer. You just can't forget about this stuff.
Yeah, true.
We're talking with the former Navy SEAL and owner of the Heiner Group, Mr. Ed Heiner. And you've been enjoying your next mission with your host, Jack L. Tilley, 12th Sergeant Major of the Army. I always love saying that. And don't forget, if you're enjoying this discussion, please like us and click on the subscribe button below. And sir, to continue the discussion, in addition with working with youth, you also have developed an educational program with students. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. It is a SEALpreneurship program, and we also have many other programs, including at small modules that mm-hmm. we teach, you know, if schools have time for a 2-week program, which was we initially cut our teeth at San Pasqual Academy, which is mm-hmm. a foster youth high school, incredible place. All kids live on campus and they go to school there. We had a long course with them. It was a wonderful course. Kids loved it. Teachers loved it. Everyone loved it. You know, that's if people don't have enough time for that. Now we can do an hour Zoom. We can do 2 days, 3 days, whatever it is. We customize it. But we teach different principles, and it's always the ownership itself. It's always how to, you know, we have a victim society. People love being the victims, right? They love mm-hmm. attaching themselves to being this victim person. And it might feel good, but it won't do good. And to understand, being accountable and understand that you own your own destiny. I mean, yeah, things happen. You get that, what I call the raw deal, right? The random ass whipping. Excuse my language, but
no.
So, you know, that has happened. But people that understand these principles and understand self-ownership, that they'll just reset from that point, right? I mean, bad things happen. Okay, got it.
Yeah.
Then move on instead of dwelling on it for life.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that my wife always gets on me about, I look at the positive things in life. And I try to think positive versus negative. I think you're right. A lot of people say, woe is me. I don't get a fair deal at anything. Nothing's going right. And, just, you know, I'm going to give up.
Yeah.
Do you run into a lot of young youth that just say, hey, you know, I just can't do it anymore?
Yeah.
And they just want to, I don't know, they just need help and need direction, I guess it is.
Well, then, a lot of the ones we work with don't have parents. So they
don't have parents? They're
the foster
kids? Yeah.
Yeah. So there you can see a lot of problems there. And even society and all the things that have been with the kids of color, we work a lot of kids with, you know, of color, black kids, Asian kids, Hispanic kids. And, you know, I think society...
Is there different issues in each group?
Not really.
No, it's all the same.
I think it's pretty much the same.
Yeah.
For the most part. But society, I think, does want to make people victims. It's like almost like a veteran. I'll be honest with you. I've had so many people, you know, since coming back from combat and war, like, oh, poor you. And poor you. I'm like, no, this is poor me. I went on voluntarily. You know, I went after it. Yep, I accepted my fate like you, like all of us did. So it's not a poor me thing. And it's these kids be like, hey, it's not a poor you. The society will tell you that you're a victim. And that will hold you down. That'll create belief systems in you that you don't control your fate. And if that happens, someone else controls it.
Mm-hmm.
And they start to click. These kids start to click. They start to understand that. I'm like, yeah, you can control your own destiny. Obviously, there's bad things that happen. But the first 15 years may have been taken from you, we tell them. But the next 70 or 80, you own it.
Is the average age about 10 or 15 or 12? What's the average?
We work mostly with high school kids. So ninth grade, 14, 15, on to 18.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we work in a program with Lennar Construction, the largest construction in the United States. And
they built some houses. I live in Florida. They built some houses.
Well, don't complain. Because I'm working with them.
Okay, go ahead.
But I don't work with them.
You don't hammer nails or
anything. No, but so we're partnering up with a HomeAid organization that helps the homeless. Young people.
Yeah.
And we're going to take this program and put it on top of, they have a jobs training program.
Yeah.
And it's in four weeks.
Well, they got in the Army now, 6 months before you get out of the service, they have what they call a certification program.
Okay.
You can do anything you want to do, like you be a carpenter, be an electrician, whatever.
Wow.
But for 6 months before they ever get out, you can get on that program while on active duty, which is a great idea. I didn't mean to cut you
off. No, that's a great idea. We don't do that in the Navy.
Yeah.
And the SEAL teams is like, hey, see you later. As soon as you take off, you're done.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's kind of a straight. It's a mission focus. They don't really think about the backside of a mission. But these kids, you know, we're working with HomeAid and Lennar, and we're going to do 2 week course out of 4 weeks. We're going to do 2 weeks mental toughness, train the mind, and then they're going to do some construction skills, tools, understanding, and then they're going to get job interviews and get employed.
Oh man, that's a great idea.
You know, get them off on the right foot. Get them. You know, they're going to pay them well. You know, give them a first fresh start in life and. You know, hopefully they can make something in their life and enjoy it.
Yeah, you know, one of the things you make me think about a lot of things, but one of the things that I always talk to people about is the circle of life. You ever heard about that?
Yeah.
About you stand in a circle, and unfortunately, some people in our life stand in a circle and they never move, and they just keep running around in that circle. But the people like yourself, and maybe me and a little part here, but step into another circle in life, and you keep it advancing in life, you keep learning about stuff, you keep building and getting better and better and better, hopefully, and helping more people. That's what
I think the military teaches that too.
Well,
right?
They
take you out of your comfort zone real quick.
Well, yeah, they force you
they
out.
They force
you. Yeah. When I got to tell you why I came into service. When I came into service, I was a troubled youth. I think I told you I spent about 9 months in a reform school. I wasn't a good kid. But I got out, I went back to school, and then there's nothing you could do to get me to step out of line.
Mm, that's right.
And I tried to be, I don't blame anything on my parents or anything. It was really me, because at that point of life, I don't know. I guess people go through what I call their dumb years, you know, where they're not listening.
Especially boys, right?
Well, I think now it's boys and girls.
Yeah,
both of them. But I was going through my dumb years, and I just did a lot of crazy things. And but when I came back out of there, you could not get me to violate a rule or anything. And then I graduated, and I remember I was sitting on a beach, and somebody said, I'm surprised I graduated, to tell you the truth. But I was sitting on the beach, and And a guy says, hey, do you want to go to college? I want you to listen to this. You want to go to college? And I says, guys like me don't go to college. Mm. Low self-esteem.
Yeah.
Nothing's going right. No direction. And then the next guy says, hey, you want to join the military? And I said, sure, okay.
Why not? There's only this thing called Vietnam going on.
Well, I didn't know about that. I didn't read no paper. I didn't hear anything. And he says, yeah, you want to join? Instead, you want to join the Army? I said, sure, okay. And then when I went down to join the service, he said, what do you want to do? I said, well, I don't know. What do you want me to do? You know, so they signed me airborne on a sign. So then, like I said, just any MOS is open there. So it really turned out good for me. So
yeah, apparently.
apparently. Well, you know, I believe in faith. I believe in God. I believe if you look at the positive things in life, don't don't dwell on the negative. And look and surround you. I'm sure you do this. You surround yourself with people that you trust and have confidence in. Yeah. And you know, they want to accomplish the mission. That's, I think, you know, I've been lucky and, like I said, in life to be around a lot of great people. So
same here.
Yeah. I just, you know, let me get better. One last question before we take a small break here in a minute. You ever wish you stayed a little longer in the Navy?
No.
How come?
I was done. Okay. I did my 9th deployment. I had taken my vehicle a couple rounds.
Yeah.
I did before I left my last deployment and had a young son. I was like, I'm just done. And back to that officer thing, I thought my skills would not be properly used. I was going to go back to Afghanistan for a year on the staff. And, you know, certain people have certain skills, and that's not one of my skills. That's not one of the things. And maybe it's selfish. Maybe it is.
Nah.
But I just knew that wasn't my fate. I wasn't going to be an admiral. I wasn't. You know, I had no aspiration to do that. I did, you know, what I did, and I was happy to leave.
Did the military make you grow up?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they did. Definitely from a, you know, young age, like I had some trouble with the law.
You don't have to tell anybody.
Not convicted.
Somebody asked me one time, he says, do you ever get an Article 15? I said, no. He says, why? I said, never got caught.
No. Actually, I have. I went to captain's mess. I'll admit it.
Is that
when
right?
I was enlisted, I went to captain's mess.
Yeah.
But it worked out well. Captain understood the circumstances, and it was enough for me to go, okay, knock that off.
Well, you know, I know you got a book coming out, and I want to make sure we plug this in
quick.
Yeah. Guts, that's coming out. We're going to talk about it on the next break, but after this break anyway. So what motivated you to write books? And I know you got two or three.
I'm on my third one. It's kind of funny because I'm going backwards. I'm with leadership, the first Fast and Fearless, and then the guts is kind of personal leadership, and the next one's going to go right into what I'm going to say is the soul.
Yeah.
And I love writing. I didn't know it. I didn't have confidence in myself as a writer, but until I started doing it. And I love it. I write articles for the paper, I write magazine articles. It's just something I
find. Is something you just fell into?
Yeah, I started and I just realized I found my. I can't speak the way I wish I could. The way I can write.
I know I can.
Well, it's some unique thing about writing that you get inside your brain. It's almost like going in, you know, spelunking, and you're finding little nuggets of gold that you didn't even know was in there.
Yeah.
So to me, it's exciting. You know, the reader can judge how good it is, but it's fun. And I think it's, you know, to me, it's something I really enjoy doing. It's like art, right?
You know, I absolutely love talking to you. I got a couple more questions. I'm going to take a break. I keep saying I'm going to take a break. Who's your mentor? And how much does your spouse get involved with anything that you do? I mean, my personally, I got to tell you, my wife is my sounding board for everything. How about you?
Well, mentor. Mentors come and go, right? You have different mentors.
Sure.
Different
a whole bunch of mentors. Yeah.
Well, actually, Charles Parisi, my partner, he's a good sounding board for that.
And you shouldn't say that. He'll hear that.
I know. I'm just greasing him up a little bit.
Okay, a little bit of money. Okay, go ahead.
But for the wife, let's see, what would she say? She'd be like, wow, I'm glad someone else has to listen to those damn stories. She's like, she's exhausted. Like, because when I'm writing, I'll just go in the kitchen and, like, because a lot of times when I'm writing, I'll get up at like 4 o'clock. I already had 3 cups of coffee.
Yeah.
I'm jacked up. She gets up a couple hours later, and I have to tell her the story, tell her the thought again and again and again and again. So, she's a good sounding board. She does listen. I don't know how much she likes absorbs it, but she does have to sit there.
You know, I tell my wife stories. I'll tell her a story, and I'll say, you know what this person did today? And she'll listen to me real patiently, and then also she'll say, well, I thought you did that before, too. It was a bad story, I guess. So she was always a person that really gave me that honest feedback, and I just love them. The other thing is, I think that for military spouses, some especially SEALs and special ops. And, you know, I'm just an old tanker, I guess. But the family really sacrifices a great deal to allow you to do the things that you like to do in the military. And I think that we can never pay them back enough. There's no question about that.
Yeah, I think that's a very important thing, is that they really do have to go through a lot of, you know, and especially if you're in and out of combat, you know, it's, you're waiting for the two people to come walking to your door in uniform, you know, and that's kind of hard on the spouses. Is
no question.
To have that knock on the door and thank God I never had to, she didn't have to see that, or I didn't ever have to do it either. I never did that duty, thank God.
I've, and you probably did the same thing, I've seen so much death in my life.
Oh, yeah.
And especially going back, I remember just in Vietnam, just stepping over bodies and doing stuff. And I thought, I just never want to see that again. And then when I was in the Pentagon for 9/11 and I went to funerals so much that I finally went and told the chief I can't do it no more.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, and that, I think that's the hard part about me. And I wish there was a way, and maybe you, I'm sure you do it through your books, but I wish that there was a way to educate our country a lot more about what the military does.
Well, the book, now, but on a lighter subject, the editor did say, McGraw-Hill said, that might be the best ending chapter of any book they've ever read.
Oh, my goodness.
That's a big compliment. I mean, some of the book might be shit, but you can go right to the last chapter. You know, it's kind of...
skip everything else. Go to the last chapter.
No pictures, but it kind of goes to... I knew where I wanted to go, and when I got there, I wrote that last chapter in one sitting.
Oh, my goodness.
Just literally... I knew exactly where I'm going to go. So the next book is probably going to pick off of that last chapter and even go back a little bit further into the what I would call a soul.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
But it does, people read, and I think they can feel the fear. You know, it's very open about it. Everybody's like, oh, you're just Navy SEAL. I'm like, well, I was scared too. You know, I've been scared. People have been, you know, there's moments you've been so scared you just didn't know if you could function, right?
Yeah.
And then you did.
And, I used to say, God, just get me out of here. I think that everybody gets closer to God.
You said promises. I've
said that a bunch. Yep. I've said it a bunch. God, if you just get me out of here, I'll never do this again, or whatever it was. And I think every service member says this thing. So, that's unbelievable.
Well, it gets you to appreciate life. It does.
I think there's no question about that. Yeah. I think I wish this country could... I don't want them to see a war. There's no question. No. I want to see it because it's a terrible thing and it stays with you for the rest of your life. But I wish they could somehow figure out how to see the kind of things that go on and see the kind of things that our service members do and what they go through. If they did, they wouldn't see the kind of things we see now in our country, I think.
There'd be more gratitude.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back. And you've been enjoying Your Next Mission.
You're watching Your Next Mission, proudly presented by the Cavalry Agency. They help brands dominate no matter their size. Ideas, strategy, action. This is Cavalry. Learn more at cavalry.com. Navy Federal Credit Union, the most trusted credit union owned by members of the military community, serving all branches of the armed forces and their families. Their members are the mission. Learn more at NavyFederal.org. Purdue Global, providing affordable online education for hardworking adults. Learn more about a personalized, innovative, and world-class education at PurdueGlobal.edu. Veterans United Home Loans, the number one VA lender for 5 straight years. If you're buying, they're funding your dreams. Learn more at veteransunited.com. Now back to your host, the 12th Sergeant Major of the Army, Jack L. Tilley.
Welcome back. I'm Jack L. Tilley, 12th Sergeant Major of the Army, and we're blessed to be here today with Ed Heiner, U.S. Navy SEAL retired and owner of the Heiner Group. And I want all you listeners to reach out to me directly. Tell us about your transition out of the military. Tell us what you'd like us to cover on this show. You know, it's not about me. It's not about anybody. It's about how do we help our veterans and families. You can call me or text me at 844-424-1134, and I'll reach out to you. I'll actually text you back or call you back. Or you can send me an email at smatilly@yournextmission.org. Okay, let's pick it up where we left off. And, sir, we're really heading into a final segment with you today, and I hope you've enjoyed it as much as I have. And I just have a couple more questions, unless you have. I noticed you've been pumping your arms up a little bit.
Thanks for asking. Envy of the Army. I don't know.
One thing I didn't bring up is a Navy Army football game, and you know why? It's because the Army lost, and it's really sort of broke my heart. So I'm not gonna.
I think it was the first thing I said to you this morning when I saw you.
No, I don't want to talk about it. We talked about it before, but your book Guts, it's about leadership, and it's released here. Really dives into the foundation principles of wellness overall, so performance, success, and happiness. What was your motivation for writing this book?
Well, a lot of it was a long story. I'm with McGraw-Hill.
I want to make sure everybody sees the book, Guts. You might want to hold.
Greatness Under Tremendous Stress, which is a very applicable now. Well, it's funny because I had finished the book, submitted it to the publisher for editing, and, the COVID hit.
Yeah.
And I ended up 3 months into COVID, pull it back and put some COVID things in them. Because it's funny because the book just unrolled. When you start talking about fear and what it does to people, you just watch our society, it just unfolded in front of us, and people fell right into the traps.
Yeah.
So really my motivation to start writing, I was going to write another title, but I switched. McGraw-Hill, thank God, he finally agreed to me to do it. But it was kind of my own journey, if you would. 4 or 5 years ago, I was having a pretty hard time in my, I couldn't sleep. I was having nightmares. I was literally hearing voices at one point.
Was it because post-traumatic stress?
Well, I assume.
I didn't mean to cut you off. No. Have you ever got evaluated or anything?
Yeah. Okay. I did. But the counseling and all that kind of stuff, it's not really for me. But I started having these issues, and it just kept getting worse and worse and worse. And then, you hit the bottle and do all kinds of stupid stuff. I knew once my wife knew, and I knew, once I heard voices at night, I was getting paranoid that, okay, something's weird here. So I actually, this is kind of, I went back to doing what I've always done. I said, okay, when I was in the SEAL teams, I was happy, I was thriving, even though it's stressful, because most people can't even believe that you have fun and enjoy something, even though it could end your life soon. So I just dissected what I'd done and all the stuff I'd learned, because one of the last jobs I did before I retired was a training officer, basic and advanced. So I was there to really look at what we do and dissect it and see what's important, what's not important, because our training pipeline was 2.5 years before our first deployment. It's long. People get injuries.
Are you trained to like 3 different skills? I can't remember what that. I used to, the guys used to tell me weapons, communications, or whatever.
Well, we're kind of master, jack of all trades, master of none, right? So, everyone trains everything. And then you may, when you're in a platoon, you might be a comms guy, you might be a sniper, you might be an explosive breacher. And every deployment cycle, you learn a new skill. So by the time you're a senior enlisted, like a chief, you're a sniper, you're a comms guy, you're every skill you pretty much have.
So I always had a hard time just doing one.
One's enough, right? But we're small units, so we have to have a lot of transferable skills across each thing.
Yeah.
So I went back and dissected what we had done and what had made me happy. I mean, just simple things about being outside or fitness or diet, how you eat, how you sleep. Take be deliberate about sleeping.
Yeah.
It sounds crazy until you can't sleep.
No, it's not crazy. I deployed to Bosnia, and we went in there. After they signed a date and peace agreement, we rolled in there, and I mean for about 2 weeks. People working, 14 hours a day or whatever. Yeah. And finally, I went to the guys working with, said, look, you got to put these guys, we got to go down. We got to start rotating, put them in a sleep plan, because they'll start doing all sorts of crazy stuff and hurting herself. And that's what we did. We put them on sleep. He was already going to do it, but you got to have a scheduled sleep plan.
But that was our number one issue in the SEAL teams when I was at training and readiness. Readiness is everything else, right?
Yeah.
Anything that we didn't cover in this training and training, you create training readiness. And the number one thing our doctors noticed was it was sleep. It wasn't PTS and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Necessarily guys are adjusting well. It's these guys would go psychotic when they couldn't sleep for 3 or 4 days. So every deployment, I would come off. I'd come back because I had a big bottle of Ambien set beside my bed. Then it wasn't a narcotic. Nobody cared.
Yeah,
here's a bottle. So when you come off a mission or whatever, you'd eat a bunch of them, sleep for 4 hours, and come back. So I went back to all those things, not the pills, but just staying deliberate about sleeping and how you treat yourself, how you self-talk, how you surround yourself with who you surround yourself with. Yeah, and So far, the books are resonating really well. I've had a lot of people respond, you know, saved my life, you did this, you did that. I'm like, thanks.
How important is the little things? I used to tell people when I was on active duty, it's the basic fundamentals that keep you alive in life. You know, basic rifle marksmanship, first aid, just the basic stuff. Did you ever focus a lot on basic fundamentals?
It's all basic. Because you'll never, what is it, the Chinese proverb, you'll never trip over a mountain, but you'll stumble over a molehill. And it's that little thing that gets you, in combat, it gets you killed.
Absolutely.
Jumping, diving, any of those things, attention to detail is critical. Because that one little piece, like,
Yeah,
that's what gets you. And we cover a lot of that in the book, how to focus, how to train your focus.
Yeah.
Because, you know, with the kids in the modern world, you got phones and everything stealing your focus constantly. Mm-hmm. And how do you regain that focus so you could actually do something of value?
Yeah. I used to do a lot of battle drills. Do you do battle drills, Trump? Sure. Everybody, you know, all the services do a battle drill. Everybody functions the same way, does the same thing every time. So, you know, what the guy on your right or left are doing, you do a lot of stuff. Yeah.
Immediate action drills. Thousands and thousands.
Remember, I'm over tanker.
That's true. But you got big tank.
We got big stuff.
I do have a claim to fame. I did call in, what do you call it, the heat round?
Yeah.
Point blank into a building one time.
Oh, is that right?
Yep. Bunch of bad guys, and like trying to breach that door was impossible, and tank did.
Yeah. I got to tell you a funny story. This is Vietnam, and we was down in Saigon, actually fighting in Saigon. I was on a tank, and I was a tank driver, and they had a sniper up there that was shooting at people, and they called for a couple of tanks, so we're rolling down through this narrow street in Saigon, just big enough to get that. It was a little bit wider for the tank, but just hardly get through there. So it opened up, and then there were some cars there. American cars. And I stopped, and the tank commander says, "Hey, look, Tilly, what are you doing?" I said, "Well, there's a freaking car." I said, "You don't want me to run over it?" I told you. No, that's what he said. He said, "Don't stop, dumbass, move out." And I ran over this car, and then people started running out to get him. So,
You don't mess with a tank or a sniper.
Well, they are a sniper. The other thing is, inside that tank, you talk about a heat round, we had a canister round. And that canister round had 1,255, that's in a beehive, but it had the, like, ball bearings. And a little sort of flat on each side. And when it comes out, it just spreads out, wipes everything out. We fired those all the time. We got caught with something. I don't want to tell you while we're talking here, but it did some quite damage there to a lot of people. So that's for sure. But, you know, that's...
better to give than receive.
Well, the one thing about it, again, I keep going back to this. I wish people would could understand more about what we do on a daily basis. You know, not just, you know, we're always going to have little rivalries with the Navy and the Army and our stuff, but I guarantee you, we're all together as a team.
Yeah.
We don't function by ourselves. We work and fight together, and nobody's more important than the other. Now, again, when it comes to the Army-Navy football game, it's a little bit different. but it's about all the stuff you're talking about. I'm sure in the guts, it's about teamwork.
Yep.
It's about leadership. It's about development, leading by example, basic fundamental stuff. So it's important sometimes to refresh your memory about that stuff.
Yeah.
But the one thing I think is really important to us about relationships. Mm-hmm. It's about talking to people and getting the trust and confidence in people. So I can't wait to read your book. So hopefully, never mind.
It's good.
I'm sure it is.
If it's not good, don't let me know.
Well, I tell that people all the time. Sir, what three things did you take away from the Navy, Navy SEAL? What's the three things that you probably really want to share with the audience that you think are important for the audience? And, no, I know we talked about a lot of stuff and all that's important, but is there three things you really think are more important than anything else?
One, I think what people can... And I think employers understand this too when they get a person coming from the military, is team. What I call team ability. You get guys from all walks of life. Like, I know there was the race car, these things are going on in society now, not in the military. You're all equally worthless, right? That's the expression. But you get people from all walks of life and you develop, I call team ability. Can you listen, take orders, and participate, sacrifice for someone else?
Yeah.
And that becomes a way of life. And it's really strange when you get outside and it's not there.
No.
A bunch of individuals moving separately have their own agendas, and you're like, wow, it's a strange world.
Yeah.
So team ability, I think, is you get a veteran that's been in for a while or understands that and did well, they're going to understand how to get on the team. Because it's hard for people sometimes to drop their own opinion.
Yeah.
Like when you get in a room and you got to come up with a plan, the regular world doesn't always adjust to that. They bitch and moan, they complain, and they, you know, undermine each other and stuff. In military, most people don't understand after you've been in for a while, it's like, okay, that's the plan. That's it.
Yeah.
The talking's over. It's doing time.
Well, you give your opinion about it. That's right. And once the opinion, once the decision's made, you're going to do it.
Once
you're
the decision's over.
That's right.
Everybody joins in until it's time. Decision's made. You get on with it.
Yeah.
It sounds strange, but I would say when I first joined, it wasn't necessarily patriotism. I didn't come from my dad was kind of like a hippie in the 60s. He was, you know, smoking weed and kicking it.
Well, let's not go there. but I understand. I came from that era. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was no overwhelming sense of patriotism in my family or anything. Yeah. But I think being in the military, being in the service, and I mean patriotism, not necessarily like, you know, I get in my truck and I'm, you know, waving my flag and drinking Budweiser, mm-hmm. but more of a gratitude.
Yeah.
A sense of gratitude. I've been on every continent except for Antarctica, and they don't carry suicide bombs there. But so I figured what it does teach you is just be how you shift that mindset. And we talked to the kids about this, is how do you shift this gratitude? Because you see what we have when you get to compare it to Africa or Middle East or, you know, Asia or something. You're like, wow. Even the most unfortunate in America is more fortunate than most people in other countries.
Yeah.
And I think Americans have forgotten that. They've forgotten just to give gratitude for what you do have, not worry about what you don't have.
Yeah.
In that sense, that's what I consider patriotism, is that I respect what I do have. And then probably the last one, it's really hard. I would call it agape love. There's a sense of brotherhood that, and people go, wow, love, that's kind of a weird, but it was, I've felt it a few times where I was in combat mainly, that it was just this really sense of connectedness with the people I was around.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, even a very emotional times. I tell people, is probably the most spiritual moments I've ever had was in the worst moments.
Yeah.
Because you could just, you just felt a deep sense, even people that you probably didn't like, personally, you know, like in engaging, like you didn't go to dinner with them, but you died for them.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a sense of brotherhood, you know, just that if other people in the world understood that, there wouldn't be a war. Ironically, it would be those moments of learning because you wouldn't have them.
Yeah.
Because people feel more connected in their life.
Yeah.
And it's unfortunate that a lot of people don't get to sense and feel that.
You know, when I got out of the service, just like you and I stayed a long time, a lot longer.
Yeah, you did.
A lot longer than you. Wait a minute. But when I got out, I thought it would always be the same. Just what you talked about, that, you know, the people next to me, the connection that you have with the people that were in the military. I thought, geez, it's got to be just about the same. And I remember when I moved into, I built a nice house. I moved in and I started walking around, shaking hands. Hey, guys, how you doing? Glad to meet you. My name is Jack Dilley. And after about a day, my wife said, you know something? You're not fitting in.
You're already not fitting in.
You're already a weirdo.
Yeah.
But she said, people don't do that. What they do is they go home and close the door.
Oh, man, that's awful.
And they don't talk to you and they don't want to connect with you. In fact, I'll talk about it in a minute. One of the things that really bothers me, sometimes I'll walk by somebody and say, hey, good morning, good afternoon, and they'll look at the ground, and they won't look at you morning, and they keep going. And I wish we could figure out a way to...
We're alone together.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's a shame. Huh. And God, I've thought about it. In fact, I've tried to start block parties and do all sorts of stuff to pull people. The 3 or 4 houses up and 3 houses on the left and the people on the left, I actually bought them gifts.
What's this guy want?
Texas Roadhouse. I bought them coupons.
Oh, yeah.
Well, because I want them to be friendly, and I want to be friendly with them, and I don't want anything from them.
Right.
But it's about what you've talked about. I'm sure what's in your book, too. It's about... it's about relationship. It's about team building. It's about, you know, living in a great community and living with a lot of people. And I miss that. I'll miss that every day until I die.
That is true. You know, one of my best experiences, I never lived, because SEALs, you know, my neighbors never even knew I was a SEAL, just to kind of that world you live in. You're in the shadows, you kind of approach life that way. But I was the operations officer for NSW and Naval Special Warfare in the Pacific.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was in Guam, and I lived on base. I'd never lived on base before. And I thought, at first, I was extremely like, nah, I don't want to, but.
Did you like it?
Oh, we loved it. 18 months. My wife loved it. I worked because that was a 7-day-a-week job.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? That was boom, boom, boom. So my wife and I, we really did love it.
Yeah.
It was such a good time.
Yeah. I had a guy when I lived in Fort Myer for a while, and I went out to a briefing out at Fort Belvoir one time, and I was the Space and Missile Defense Sergeant Major. So, but when I got to be the Sergeant Major of the Army, the guy that was my neighbor was a special operator. And he says, and he came to my office and says, "Hey, Sergeant Major, will you come out and visit?" I said, "Why didn't you tell me when you was there?" I said, "I couldn't." You know, and I went out and he was doing all sorts of stuff. It was really a sort of neat. I have so much respect for guys like you that really, I'm just an old soldier that loves it. But the kind of things that you guys do, the SEALs and the special operators, really, I'm going to tell you now, I don't want to forget this. I had two guys that were Delta guys. And I won't mention their name because I'm sure they're out of the program. They're retired now. But I was at Academy, it was Sergeant Major Academy with, and they never let you take their picture.
Right.
So we graduated, and one of the guys, in fact, his first name was Jack, too. He says, I said, "Well, Jack, hope I'll see you around." He said, "Well, if you ever see me, don't talk to me." Okay. I said something like real smart to him. I don't care. I don't want to talk to you anyway. He said, no, let me explain. And he told me, he says, "I could be working." I said, "I got you. I understand. I appreciate you telling me that." So when I'm in Korea during the Olympics, I'm stationed in Korea, and I'm down there looking at stuff, and I see him, and I don't say anything to him. And a few minutes later, he moved up next to me and said, "Hey, are you working?" I said, "Yeah." I said, "Okay." It was really sort of funny. So
it's going to move away to him. It might be a sniper on him. Oh, don't get near him.
Well, I had one last story before I get out of here. I was at Normandy one time when the president was there, and I had a unit. I was in the 1st Armored Division. I had a bunch of soldiers down there marching and doing stuff. And I'm standing there watching the president talking. This guy comes up and taps him on the shoulder. He said, "Would you move?" And I said, "I'm in the division sergeant." I said, "Hey, look, I'm not going to move." He says, "You're in the sight of a sniper."
I'm moving.
I said, "Not a problem. Let me shift you." I got out of the way.
Yeah. So, it's funny. I was going to make a Normandy joke.
Was that
back in the invasion when you were there?
Well, it could have been.
I was going to make an age joke there.
Oh, wait a minute. I think it's time to cut this off.
And okay. You said 12th Sergeant Major of the Army. Yeah. That means you're a new guy to 11 other people. They don't call you, "Hey, new guy."
I always tell the guys, the new guys are getting out. Now I tell them I got to carry my bags. You guys are. In fact, I talked to the 16th Sergeant Major. There's only been 16 here in history.
I didn't know that until I talked to you. That's amazing.
Yeah. It's usually a 4-year tour. The Sergeant Major of the Army testifies around Congress. But I traveled, I may have told you this, I traveled about 800,000 miles when I was there. But we really get out, talk to soldiers and family members, see what's going on, pick that information back, and try to do what we can. But during my tenure, we worked on medical care. We got pay raises. I got great pay raises.
Good. Thank you.
Well, I tell people all the time, I wasn't working on your pay. I was trying to fix mine.
That's right. But you get it. You get it too.
I can't tell you how much fun it is talking to the people that are listening today. I hope you get this book, Guts. Here's a guy that risked his life in protection of our country. Don't forget that. It's important for us to teach each other about life, teach each other about leadership and development and all that stuff. And, you can read a book and understand it, but here's a guy that, lives by that creed. So you ought to get the book and read it. I'm sure you'll enjoy it. And
I appreciate
it. And so, sir, any final thoughts, anything you want to share with the audience? I know I probably took you off kilter here a little bit.
That's all right. No, that's
anything that you want to share that maybe we didn't cover?
I think just... just more people get out there and do something for someone else. Others focus is what I would call it.
Yeah.
Is one, it's a path to happiness. It's also what the world needs. We have enough self-serving. Look at no matter what political party your people affiliate with, it's a lot of self-serving. And it's I think this country is better than that. And I think just if people look and serve other people, serve something higher than themselves, and they'll get the satisfaction from it. So,
yeah, we live in a great country.
We do.
And I think, and you've said it a bunch of times today, I think some people, it's all about me. It's, one of the, I got a lot of great advice, I think, at probably every level I ever worked at. But one of the things that when I got to the Sergeant Major of the Army, I had a friend of mine call me, he says, "Hey, look," he said, "Can I tell you something? Give you some recommendations." I said, "Sure," a good friend. And he says, "The things that made you successful now don't change them because that's why people hired you for this job. I said, well, that makes a lot of sense. He said, the other thing is, he said, 50% of the people won't like him.
Yeah. You got to come to that realization.
That's right. And yes, 50% right. of the people will like you. So you can never make a good decision. So when you make a decision, you make what's best for the United States Army, what's best for the Navy. Yeah. It's not about you. It's about what's right for your service. And that's
and the higher you go, the harder that is.
The harder it is.
You have to weed through a lot of different things.
Well, it's because you don't want to – you see things that sort of eat at you a little bit, and you say, geez, that doesn't sound fair. But look at the answers of the questions first before you ever make a decision. And be careful about what you say. I was in a meeting one time, and a guy says, hey, Sergeant Major, what do you think about that? That's a dumbass decision. And the guy says, we'll take that $10 million and move it over there.
That's what I want him to do.
So anyway, well,
good ideas and stuff in meetings also turn into projects. That was one thing when I was in charge. I was like, listen, we're going for the admiral, whoever would come in. I mean, if you come up with a genius idea in this room that I didn't know about, it's your project. Knock it off.
Yeah, no, I got a lot of it. Well, thanks to Ed Hedner. I feel bad even calling him Ed. Thanks to the commander. He's what a great guy. And I can't say enough about his book or books. Anything he writes, you ought to read, because here's a guy that has given a lot for our country and still gives a lot for our youth in our country. So, read. Follow him. Do whatever you can to help him, because he's a great, great, great Navy SEAL and great person, that's for sure. I'm Jack L. Tully, 12th Sergeant Major of the Army. And you've been enjoying your next mission. If you haven't been enjoying it, you must be dead, because I certainly have been enjoying this. And thank you for being part of Your Next Mission today. Please visit our website at yournextmission.org and leave me a review, just what the commander said. Leave me a good review. If you got a bad one, don't show me. But leave
keep scrolling.
Keep going somewhere else. And you can also visit our partners and they can provide you with so many services that will assist you in your transition from the military. And also visit our corporate partners and see all the jobs that are available for you. You know, it's not just about talking. It's about trying to find employment for you. Please know we want to assist you in any way we can. We want to make sure that we help our veterans and families in any way we can. And please follow me on all my personal social media channels. I never thought I'd ever say this. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, LinkedIn. And if you enjoyed our discussion, please, with Ed Hyder, please click on like us and click on the subscribe button below. It's important for us to pull together as a family and sort of stay together. So don't forget, we want to hear from you. Please leave me a message or send me a text at 844-424-1134. Send me an email at smatilly@yournextmission.org. Thanks again to Ed Hyder for being on with us today. It was great having you on the show today. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
And I want to leave you with three things to remember. Last year, I talked a lot about thoughts and ideas, but this year, I want to leave with three things. We're dedicated in season two to Your Next Mission, to all of those veterans and family members who struggle with mental illness, which so often has led to someone taking their life. In fact, here about 4 weeks ago, I had a good friend of mine that really, quite frankly, walked out of his house, walked down to the woods and committed suicide. Please reach out to someone you haven't spoke to in a long time and just check on them. I always call it a buddy check and see how they're doing, because we're all family. I'm never going to give you any money, but we're all family. The second, I'd like all veterans to be proud of who you are. I mean, you're great role models for this country, and you do a lot of wonderful things. So I'm asking you, and I tried to get the commander to do it, but I'm asking you to wear your hat. Every Friday, wear your hat. Show your colors. Show people who you are. And if you have if you wear your hat on a Friday now, take a picture and send it to me or show it to me on social media. I'll put it back here on the screen, let everybody see it. It's important for us to be the bridge in this country, to help our fellow Americans out. I want to encourage everyone who is with us today to reach out to your neighbor. You know, offer a smile or a helping hand. Together, let's try to bridge that divide that really that has affected all of us here lately. You know, we live in a great country. We have a lot of great people that that really did so much for us. And so let's smile, be happy, and try to make it a better place each and every day. And again, thanks for being with us today. Thanks to Your Next Mission, and thanks to Cloudcast Media, and of course, our four presenting sponsors, Navy Federal Credit Union, Purdue University Global, Veterans United Home Loans, and Navy Federal Credit Union. We appreciate all you do for our military. See you on the high ground. Hoo-ah!
You've been listening to Your Next Mission, brought to you by the American Freedom Foundation. Learn more by visiting yournextmission.org.
Cloudcast Media.